So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
Okay, Bret Hart. Santa's been watching you all year. You've been a good boy. You had an excellent match tonight. What is it you want most for Santa to bring you this year?
Well, I want you to bring for me most. I want you to bring peace and prosperity to everybody everywhere around the world. And for me personally, I want you to bring to me the biggest, the baddest, the meanest, and the toughest competitors in the entire World Wrestling Federation. Just so I can prove to myself and to all the skeptics, everybody everywhere, that I am the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. I am the World Wrestling Federation champion, and I just want to prove it. And also, I want you to have a Merry Christmas, too.
Yes, and to you, too, Bret Hart.
Welcome to Review Away, everybody. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. And Wei, what did you think of the Survivor Series earlier tonight? I think the main event, they definitely Piper got a lot of people's interest in it. And man, that finish.
I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I was just like, whoa.
You got to give them credit for going that direction.
Yeah, like, you're going to do that? I definitely, wow, I can't believe that.
I think Raw tomorrow night... definitely going to be much more interesting now as a result.
Yeah, and it looked to me from watching the show tonight that there was definitely something that they were building, you know. And so I definitely really think that...
a lot of seeds were planted.
Yeah, I really want to see what happens tomorrow. And that that match in the middle there, I thought it was actually pretty good.
Yeah, it was a solid... fun little match. I enjoyed
it. Yeah. And just
the opener surprised me.
The opener did it?
I thought so. I wasn't expecting
that. Good way
or
a bad way?
Good way.
You liked it? You thought it was that good?
You didn't? What was wrong with that finish? Made sense.
Yeah, but I just think, I don't know. I think I've seen better, and I was expecting more from the people involved.
Well, I thought the show, 3 hours, I think the people, I agreed with most of the callers tonight.
Yeah. Well, I did too. And I guess I've just been having a okay Sunday, maybe if I was feeling better today.
Well, you're going to feel better, Wei, because we're about to chat about the 1992 Survivor Series. This took place 18 years ago in Richfield, Ohio. And let's get right into it. The show starts off with a sermon from Slick.
Well, the Coliseum home video starts off with the sermon.
Yes, we both saw the Coliseum home video version of the Survivor Series. And Slick is a babyface at this point, and this was kind of appropriate, being that he returned on Raw this past Monday night. And he talks about, whenever you see darkness in the WWF, it is only temporary. In 1992, it was not temporary, folks. It was about another 6 years. The announcers for tonight are Vince McMahon and Bobby Heenan.
Well, hold on. What else did he say in the promo?
That's all I noted.
It had nothing to do with the show.
No.
It was just him talking for a few minutes.
When does a sermon ever have to deal with anything of substance?
No, why put it on here? Why put it here?
It's, they're trying to reach out to the religious segment.
Okay.
I don't know. They're trying to push Slick here as a babyface.
All right.
Was a horrible gimmick. Reverend Slick. He's a legitimate reverend, too.
Is he?
Yep. Ken Johnson. Vince McMahon, Bobby Heenan calling the show tonight. And they announced tonight's going to feature a coffin match, a nightstick match, and champion versus champion. This sounded like a TNA pay-per-view right out of 2009. And we're going to kick off with high energy Owen Hart and Coco Beware taking on the head shrinkers Fatu and Samu. And Coco Beware comes down the ring with Owen and does the worst cartwheel I have ever seen. And Owen just ignores him as he goes to the ring. No entrance for the head shrinkers. They got the heat on Coco with a double team early on. Then Owen gets into the ring, makes a comeback, but is cut off. And then Fatu ends up hitting a splash off of the top rope over a standing Samu to pin Owen clean as Coco gets in too late to break up the fall.
Yeah.
Amazing when you look back here at where Owen was on the pecking order at this point. jobbing clean in the opener.
Sure. Well, he had to pay his dues. Offa here was eating KFC, I noted.
Yes, he was just
standing next to the ring eating a chicken wing.
Well, back in the early 90s in the WWF, that's what Samoans did. They were animals who just ate meat.
Fried chicken?
Yeah.
Vince at one point says, the head shrinkers are hungry, and that's what it takes to survive. And that's what it's all about here at the Survivor Series.
Oh, I miss Vince McMahon on play-by-play.
At the end of the match, in the replay, we got the brain scan.
Yeah.
Which is Bobby Heenan's... In football games, they have telestrators, I believe that's what they're called,
yep.
Where a football analyst would analyze on screen using a pen to show you. And they would always do these things with brain and with the king where they would do joke drawings on top of images. And
yeah.
I really like these.
Heenan outlined the finish and ended up drawing a turkey.
Yes. I preferred Lawler's, though, because he can actually draw.
That's true.
And they always look funny.
We go backstage, and Lord Alfred Hayes is with the Big Boss Man, who says that Nail should be serving a long sentence, and he cannot be rehabilitated. And Hayes just notes, great intensity shown by the Big Boss Man.
Were you the guy who impersonated him?
It was. I got paid a royalty fee.
Snickers.
Sean Mooney is in the other locker. Oh, sorry. He's not in a locker room. It's simply a locker room backdrop that they took to every single pay-per-view show.
Yeah.
And warns viewers...
That's what they should have brought back on Monday.
That would have been fun, yeah. They warned viewers that the nightstick match must be viewed with discretion, just like the Jeff Jarrett mixed martial arts exhibition.
Yeah.
And then he interviews Nails.
Oh, my God.
Who cuts the most ridiculous, comical promo.
It was awesome.
And I've got all of the audio.
I've been waiting for this day for a long, long time. When I was sitting in that 6x9 cell for the past 2,478 days, I laid awake thinking at night when I got out what I'd do to the Big Boss Man. Well, now I'm out. Big Boss Man, this time you don't have those six other prison guards behind you. This time, you will not be able to handcuff me to that steel bunk bed. Boss Man, you and your other prison guards know how good of a climber I am. Boss Man, I'm going to climb that 15-foot pole. I'm going to take that nice stretch. I'm going to take it and break both your stinking legs. I'm going to take that nightstick and cram it down your stupid stinking throat, Boss Man. When I get finished with you, not even your buddies at Cobb County Jail are going to recognize you, Boss Man. I was an innocent man. I was put there for crimes I did not do. Do you understand me, Boss Man? I'm gonna beat you within an inch of your life, and this time I'm gonna finish the job. You're gonna learn what it's like to serve hard to me.
This was just so campy.
He says he's a very good climber and that he was convicted of crimes he didn't commit. To me, he sounds exactly like an angry 6-year-old. Like if you were to go into maybe a kindergarten and then talk to the most pissed off kid there that day, he would sound exactly with the same head posture.
Pip, boss, man. He was just like, it sounded like he was almost choking and yelling at the same time. It was so over the top gimmicky. Yeah. Like it was so ridiculous.
Awesome. Like, really great.
It just shows you how a character can be so ridiculous, but when they introduced him, it was like they did vignettes week after week where it was just they showed a prison and they would just zoom towards the prison and you would hear his voice, but you'd never see him.
That's cool.
And he kept saying, "I'm coming for you, boss man. Wow. I'm coming for you." And then when he finally came, he beat the shit out of the boss man with a nightstick on Superstars. It was like such a big heavy duty angle that this guy was so over as a heel. Like he just scared the hell out of you.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he says he did not commit these crimes, and the facials, the yelling, it was all just intense and crazy. And then Vince McMahon says, yes, he definitely is a frightening individual. And there it was a funny part here because later Nails would attack Vince McMahon over a pay-per-view payoff and then accuse Vince McMahon of sexually assaulting him. Not a smart move.
Could you imagine if... I don't believe it, but like, could you imagine Vince having his way with this big man talking that had the voice of like, the angry Darth Vader?
And then Vince McMahon would be cutting the promo about not committing the crimes that he's been charged
yes.
with. Then we go back to a Big Boss Man promo. This was the failing of the Coliseum video. We got Boss Man bumpers here.
Yeah.
Where he cuts another promo for the match. Yeah. And that leads to Nails against the Big Boss Man in a nightstick match. Nails, he's horrible. Like, just a horrible wrestler. Yeah. He's out of shape. Bad promo. But, again, I go back to the angle they shot that, like, got this guy over as a monster. But I don't know what they saw in this guy other than he was tall.
Yeah.
Like, he was just horrible. A really bad worker.
Sure. But that, I mean... It was par for the course back then. Like nobody.
There was some bad stuff on this show.
Yeah, and the crowd was always hot on these.
That's
shows.
What I was gonna say. Like
these
we watched
Boss Man matches.
Remember when we watched the Boss Man Mountie match?
Yeah.
Where that match sucked.
Yeah.
And the crowd was just nuts for it. And this was the same. They go back and forth. Crowd was very very hot. Boss Man was the first one to reach the nightstick, but then it's knocked out of his hands and Nails attacks the Boss Man with the stick. You could grab the nightstick, but that didn't end the match. It just meant you could use it. And then Boss Man makes a comeback, hits his finish, the sidewalk slam for the clean win. They booked it very short, which was smart. Heenan notes, they'll be feeling this in the morning. And McMahon says he doesn't think this is over, as Nails is on his feet leaving the ring. So they clearly want to continue this feud, but you figure if you want to continue it, you should have put Nails over here.
Yeah.
This was pretty
Maybe
definitive.
Just meant it wasn't the end of Nails.
Well, in hindsight, it was a good move because Nails would shortly be done with the company. So
yeah, so this
is his final pay-per-view.
This was what we were warned against seeing. This was what we were advised as viewers. And why would the court sanction this? Why would the court allow this?
Well, he was out, I think. I think his sentence was up, and that's how he was able to leave prison.
And he couldn't afford a new suit.
He wanted the suit to remind him of what the boss man put him through.
Okay.
Sean Mooney with a Coliseum home video exclusive with Nails. Nails comes and attacks Mooney and says, "That was just another case of misjustice." And he leaves. Then Tatanka is backstage singing.
He's inside some, like a...
it's like some sauna.
Yeah, it's like a sauna or like a wood cabin. Because native people don't use locker rooms.
No. They build ones. He's next to Lord Alfred Hayes, who calls him Tatanka. And he discusses Rick Martel stealing his native feathers. And Martel will feel the power of his natives and his little braves.
Yes.
Those are his fans, the natives and the little braves.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard a little bit of Tatanka talking about this feud on The Law earlier tonight. And he made his big triumphant return to Raw last Monday. Where he was very excited when I talked to him that he was going to be wrestling and potentially doing an angle with Nexus.
Really?
Yeah. And instead, well, he came and he did his war dance with Dusty Rhodes.
As part of a gag.
Yeah. That's why they told him, bring your gear.
I know.
And he assumed he was working.
Yeah.
Poor Tatanka.
Oh, well, he got paid, didn't he?
They replay... Then Gene Okerlund is with Ric Flair and Razor Ramon. And calls them one of the most awesome teams ever put together. And they replay the angle from WWF Primetime, where Savage names Mr. Perfect as his replacement partner after the Ultimate Warrior was fired. And Heenan was the MVP of this angle.
Yeah.
He begs Kurt Hennig to stay with them. Then he's begging him on two knees. and Perfect just pours water all on top of him to the point that you had sympathy for Bobby Heenan here. He offers to buy Perfect a car, a boat, or double his pay.
Yeah.
This was so great.
This was basically them 2 weeks away from the pay-per-view. Oh, fuck. The Warrior is gone.
And the Bulldog they had to get rid of.
And so they left it basically up to Bobby the Brain Heenan here to turn Mr. Perfect babyface and give them a new main
Both
event.
Both guys were great here. Perfect cut an awesome promo saying, I accept, and I will see you at the Survivor Series. This was really, really well done angle, and it was something that you had not seen Mr. Perfect wrestle since SummerSlam of the prior year.
Against Bret Hart.
Yes, so there was, I'm sure, a ton of interest to see him. Just his return, I think, instantly became the biggest draw on this show going in.
Yeah, I think there's no way that I couldn't have felt sudden. Because, I mean, towards the end, it just didn't seem like Perfect had enough motivation all of a sudden. First of all, he's aligned with Flair and these guys so tightly. And now, just based on this one little thing, he's going to work against Flair and Heenan, but they did their best with what they were given.
They go back to Oakland. Flair cuts a great promo. Surprise. And then Razor Ramon does, like, verbatim. Like, when he was first brought in, it was like, you act like Al Pacino from Scarface. And he eventually, like, morphed into finding his own character here. But these early days, like, this was just Al Pacino.
It was a light. Scarface impression.
Yes. Yeah. And he says that he's going to carve them up.
Yeah, classic.
Yes.
Classic.
And then Flair, before Oakland throws back to the announcers, Flair reminds us that this is the Survivor Series.
All the promos on the show so far have been very entertaining, either because they're funny, or like in retrospect, or simply because they were good promos.
Yep.
The wrestling, though, not that great.
No, there has not been a good match on the show thus far. And we go to Rick Martel against Tatanka. Midway through the match, Doink comes down the aisle with balloons, and they say he's this random clown that follows the WWF around, and security apparently just doesn't stop him. Some man, this was awesome, Doink is walking down the entranceway, and this father or something jumps up from the crowd and yells at him, "Get out of here!" He's visibly annoyed that this clown is distracting his view. It was just so great. If you have this video, go watch when he comes down. This guy is pissed. He just wants to watch Rick Martel and Tatanka. We see the deep arm drag spot by Tatanka that he likely learned from Ricky Steamboat that you can see on Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Martel takes a shot to the gut off the second rope, then a tomahawk chop. Then a top rope chop to the head of Martel, and then Tatanka hits the Samoan drop for the win. I didn't really understand why Doink was here on the pay-per-view match. It seemed to me very distracting, especially if you were there in the live audience.
I guess they're just introducing him.
I guess. And then Doink ends up handing off the balloons to some fans and then pops them. So you're at least planting the seeds here that this guy is a heel and would eventually culminate in a huge feud with Crush.
Yes.
Sean Mooney's backstage with Randy Savage and Mr. Perfect with the locker room phone booth backdrop. There's a promo here from Randy Savage where he says he doesn't like or trust Mr. Perfect, but he feels Perfect is a superior athlete and they can be the perfect team together. And then Perfect gives a woo to the camera. Now, I don't quite understand Savage's logic. He doesn't trust this guy, but of all the people on the roster, he picked him because he's better. He feels than Savage. So
that makes sense.
I guess so.
And, well, his logic is that nobody knows these two better than Mr. Perfect.
It put over Perfect significantly well.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the promo from all four men in this feud. And I think about this, and I wonder how many takes it took them to do this. There's probably one take. But you can't possibly script a better promo than what these guys gave. They used just the perfect amount of words. They hit all the relevant topics. And everybody's delivery was so unique to themselves. Everybody has their own style.
Yeah. Also in that promo, it was so funny. It's just, maybe I've just watched too many backstage interviews at MMA events, but just seeing Mooney introduced Randy Savage, and he immediately puts his arms up and then twirls in a circle when he's introduced. Mm-hmm, it just looks so ridiculous that this guy would react to a camera and someone interviewing him like Yeah, look at me.
Yes.
I'm Randy Savage.
Well, you just saw an escaped convict talk.
That's true.
At length.
So then we go to one half of our double main event, Ric Flair and Razor Ramon against Randy Savage and Mr. Perfect. As we mentioned, Perfect's first match since SummerSlam of 91. He legitimately only had 2 weeks notice here. Yeah. And you could tell, like, he was not in the best of shape here. Mm-hmm. Like, looked very big. Perfect is in first, but then tags Savage in. The heels get the heat on Savage, with Ramon working on the ribs of Savage and then onto the right leg. Perfect then teases leaving the ring at one point, where he walks down the aisle as if he's going to leave, but then he comes back. And McMahon defends him, saying he was regrouping. Flair then takes a chair, hits Savage in the head on the floor. Perfect is into the ropes and takes out the referee. And Ramon then goes for the razor's edge. Perfect counters and hits a back body drop. And then there's a big pop for the Perfect Plex. Mm-hmm. He gets a visionary fall, but Flair breaks it up as a new referee enters the match. Perfect then hits a Perfect Plex onto Flair, but Hebner gets in late and Flair kicks out. And then Flair and Ramon double-team Mr. Perfect as the refs try to intervene. They toss the refs aside, and it's a DQ finish. And Flair applies the figure four leg lock to Mr. Perfect after the match. Savage makes the save and hands a chair to Mr. Perfect to break the figure four, and Perfect gets rid of Ramon and Flair with chair shots. So Savage and Perfect get the win by DQ. I wasn't blown away by this match. Mm. It was fine. It was the best match up to this point, but as we said, that's not saying a whole lot.
I'm sure at the time, in the right context, I'm sure the heat was probably huge, and probably the interest was huge for this. But as a technical match, no, it wasn't. Perfect there. Here was just, especially in the beginning of the match, was just really doing a ton of punching and kicking. You can tell.
Perfect was not like in great ring shape. Ramon was not, you know, steady worker himself.
And then even after this match, like, Vince and then Savage and Perfect, they're all like, they are the perfect team. Well, how are they the perfect team if they can't even get a clean win?
Yeah, it was weird because they were getting Razor Ramon ready for the main event of the next pay-per-view. Yeah. So you don't want to beat them. But at the same time, it's like, we can't get a clean finish in a tag match. Like, yeah. There was no reason you couldn't have, you know, Perfect pin Flair or Savage pin Flair. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't see why you couldn't have done that. If your solution was, well, Perfect's our best replacement, but we have to do a fuck finish, what's the point? Mm. Like, I'm never a fan of, like, main event matches that have to be booked, like, with a DQ finish. And it's not like they were going back to this match or anything like that. It just seemed...
They were going to branch off to a Perfect and Flair.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why they didn't position this in the main event.
That's true. Okerlund then is backstage with Flair and Ramon. Flair seemed very, very confused here backstage after this match. Ramon says he was double-crossed one time in his life, and Perfect can ask that Chico what happened to him if you can find him. So we're led to believe Razor might have permanently disabled a man.
Killed him.
Then we get a squash match on a pay-per-view, way.
Well, we had Yokozuna backstage receiving a massage from geisha girls, and he's being interviewed by Lord Alfred Hayes here.
Who also sits down and gets the geisha girls to rub him down. This was the closest they ever got to endorsing, like, a rub and tug.
This was Yokozuna's pay-per-view debut.
Yes. And he was introduced not from Japan, but from the Polynesian Islands.
Oh, was he?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I never noticed that before, because in the future, he was always billed as from Japan.
Yeah. Yeah.
But here it was from the Polynesian Islands.
Japanese.
Yes. And this is where they go to the segment. Now, I am pretty sure what Lord Alfred said was one thing, but I rewound it to check, because I heard Lord Alfred Hayes outside the dressing room, and he's like, "Let's go talk with these chaps." And I rewound it to make sure that they didn't say something that might have been a slur. Then, Fuji brought in the geisha girls from Tokyo to massage them. During the intro, McMahon says that Yokozuna has the American catch-as-catch-can style and the karate style.
What?
How does Yokozuna have the catch-as-catch-can style of American wrestling?
Or the karate style.
Yes, he's been training with Carl Gotch. Yes, and Lyoto Machida. Virgil then comes down, and I gave him a pass on the comment that Lord Alfred Hayes did not make. Then Vince says that Virgil is going to be shucking and jiving.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
This was dumb. Virgil, he gets on the offense, and he goes to attempt an O'Connor roll. Mm-hmm. Now, Yokozuna grabs onto the rope, so Virgil cannot complete this. What would have happened if he had actually rolled through? Yokozuna would have fell on top of him rather than roll over. Then we actually got to see what happened later on, because first Virgil jumps into a side slam and takes a leg drop. Then Virgil makes a comeback and goes for a roll-up, but instead of rolling him up, Yoko just sits on Virgil. Mm-hmm. I love that spot. Irish whip to the corner, runs in back first, and then the bonsai drop for the win. Yokozuna, they had huge plans for here at this time to headline WrestleMania, and Virgil was not going to be going over in this match. We go backstage, and Mooney is with Savage and Perfect, who are celebrating. Perfect then picks up two loose turkeys, one for Ramon, one for Flair, and tosses them on the ground, and then he has a little chicken for Bobby Heenan, and Savage then says, "Can you say gobble, gobble?" And then Perfect says, "You're the best." And Savage replies, "No, you're the best." And then they both say in concert, "We're perfect." So lame. I couldn't say gobble, gobble, but I sure could say salmonella poisoning here.
Yeah.
From this segment. This was gross.
What a waste of two
turkeys and a
nice
chicken.
Turkeys. That's right. They just tossed them on the floor.
Maybe Offa was going to eat them.
Yeah.
Leads us to our next match. It's Money Incorporated, the tag team champions, and the Beverly Brothers, Bo and Blake, against the Nasty Boys and the Natural Disasters in a traditional elimination style match where if one person was eliminated, so was their partner. IRS gets on the stick and says if people want to survive, they need to pay their taxes. Now, the early part is the disaster is destroying the Beverly Brothers. Very slow match. All the men then suddenly get in the ring brawling, leads to Earthquake pinning Blake, and they are eliminated. Money Incorporated then hits a double backdrop to Earthquake. Heenan describes him as being manhandled, and then Heenan talks about Perfect needing to call. Oh, then Heenan gets off track here talking about Mr. Perfect and says that Mr. Perfect needs to call Lloyd's of London for some insurance after Razor Ramon threatened him, which was funny because Lloyd's of London actually had insured Mr. Perfect after he retired.
Oh, really?
And then he came back to the ring. IRS then rolls up Typhoon, Sags runs in, and then does the exact same finish where he rolls up IRS, and we get a post-match clothesline to IRS. Babyfaces get the win. This match sucked.
Yeah, who cares? Typical.
Then got a great, great promo backstage. Lord Alfred Hayes did something we could not do, Way. He got an interview with Virgil. Virgil is laid out on a bench in the locker room, and Hayes asks, "I have never seen you take such a shellacking like you did tonight. What was it like?"
Virgil, I don't want to intrude. Do you think you could talk just a little bit?
Yeah, let me get it on. Oh, man.
Virgil, I've followed you all through your career. I've never seen you take such a shellacking before from a 500-pound monster. What was it like?
Oh, man, Alfred, when he dropped on my stomach, it's like the Titanic falling on you, man. It just, like, knocked all the wind, and it was all the life out of me, man. I don't know what hit me. You know, one thing I have to say, Alfred, this Yakuza, whatever food you bought from the Far East, this man is a menace. He's dangerous, man. And I got to tell all the guys in the WWF, especially the world champion, Bret Hart, brothers, you know, definitely got your hands full now. This man is a menace to society.
Virgil.
Oh, my God.
This was so good. He calls him Yakuza. Yakuza. And he warns the entire roster, including Bret Hart, that this man is a menace to society.
Yes.
This was awesome.
Yeah.
And this even, I don't know how many months in advance they had planned the WrestleMania main event, but if they knew they were going to Bret and Yokozuna, they did a fantastic job here of doing this and then a promo later with Bret that clearly steered you in that direction.
Did it? Really?
I thought
so. Okay, we'll get to it later.
He specifically said Bret Hart's name in here of being careful because this guy is going to murder you.
Mm-hmm.
They then do a recap of the Undertaker-Kamala feud. Kamala is scared of coffins, and they show clips from TV where as soon as a coffin shows up, he runs through the audience.
Yep. They would do the same thing with Yokozuna like a year or two later.
Yep. We get a promo with Paul Bearer as the Undertaker is constructing a coffin, and Taker says that Kamala will not survive Survivor Series, and then he shuts the coffin on the cameraman as it goes to black.
Mm.
Yes. Maybe Abyss was in there, or the Pope. So that leads to the coffin match between Kamala and The Undertaker. Harvey Whippleman introduces Kamala, and I'm thinking here, right away, why would Kamala agree to this match? And like a minute later, Heenan says that they agreed to this match because of money and to prove that Kamala is better than The Undertaker. And I'm satisfied with that. All I want is something. Just give me some response.
Why does Kamala need money?
I don't know. Maybe the coffin match would be a bigger payoff.
But why does he
maybe
need
he wanted
money?
More than his SummerSlam payoff.
Yeah, but he's in the jungle. Why does he need money?
Well, he's been
he hunts.
He's been domesticated now in the U.S. After they found him. They show a fan dressed up as Paul Bearer in the audience, just rubbing an urn, which looked very strange. I was always a big fan of Kamala's theme music.
Yeah.
It was great. Just like weird tribal dance music.
That's what you like.
It was great. Kamala's offense consisted of chops and kicks, and then kicks and chops. We see a clothesline over the top rope by Kamala. Kamala then hits a big splash in the middle of the ring. And then Kim Chi throws the urn into Kamala, and he freaks out at the urn. And Taker then just picks up the urn and hits Kamala in the head. Then the Undertaker pins him. But I think this was a fuck-up, because Heenan says after the pinfall, well, now you have to get him in the coffin to win the match. So we've already seen him pin him, and now he's got to put him in the coffin. I think that Undertaker, just out of routine...
Yeah.
Went to pin him.
You could be right.
And forgot that, oh shit, I have to win this match by putting him in the coffin. And that's exactly what he did. He just rolled him into the coffin. And then they nailed it shut.
Yeah.
Which, I don't care how much of a worker you are, that would freak me out.
Really?
Having a coffin nailed shut?
Yeah. It's not a real coffin. It's a box.
It's a closed, an enclosed box.
Yeah. What's so bad about that?
Ugh. I would be super paranoid about being in this. I'd be very claustrophobic in there.
Oh, okay.
Knowing that I can't get out with these nails. Like, it's freaky. And it's fucking wrestlers, dude. They'd probably rib you and leave you in there for, like, hours. Then Sean Mooney is backstage with Shawn Michaels. And that was a bad match, by the way, I thought.
It was not good. It was a nothing match. I like the nailing, though.
Yeah, yeah. It was an extra added bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Mooney is with Shawn Michaels backstage, and they discuss the angle where Sean pulled Sherry in front of him when Marty Jannetty went to attack him with a mirror and ended up taking Sherry out. Michaels just beat the British Bulldog for the Intercontinental title, who was also fired along with the Ultimate Warrior for drug-related reasons, leading into this show. And then Michaels does the MMA math theory where he beat Bulldog, but Bulldog beat Brett. Therefore, he should beat Brett tonight at the Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get a Coliseum exclusive with Harvey Whippleman and Kim Chi upset at Kamala for not listening to them, and that's why he lost the match. They open the coffin. Kamala looks like he's having a seizure, and they yell at him. And this was the beginning of the babyface turn, the very brief babyface turn before Kamala left the company.
What language does Kim Chi speak?
Ugandan?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess that's where Kamala was from. Brooklyn Brawler Ease? I don't know.
Was that who played Kim Chi?
Yeah, Steve Lombardi.
Oh, wow. This was all pretty cool, and I really believed it as a kid, that this man trapped inside would have a seizure.
Yeah, that's what happens in coffins. You either die or have a seizure.
Well,
and then it's the main event of the Survivor Series, everybody. Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels for the WWF title, with Vince McMahon calling the action at ringside.
Yes.
And Oakland is backstage with Hart, and he puts over all the challengers Hart has taken on since winning the title.
They keep billing Bret as the most scientific wrestler to ever wrestle. So he's like a scientist.
Yep. He's Dr. Hart. And they list all the men he's beaten recently. Rick Martel, the Berserker, the Mountie, Papa Shango, and Virgil. If that's not a murderer's row of challengers.
Oh, my God.
Then... he starts cutting the promo on Shawn Michaels. And Bret's made this he's mentioned this in interviews before, but he is incapable of calling this man Sean. he always calls him Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
He's like, and he did it like 5 times in a minute.
Yeah.
Like, just call him Shawn Michaels.
Well, he did it here, in this year too, when injuries come back.
And he says,
and Shawn Michaels, it's not about giving thanks for surviving one night. It's like surviving 8.5 years. That's what I've been doing, Shawn Michaels. I've been surviving a long time. I started out on the bottom, Shawn Michaels, of the World Wrestling Federation. I started out taking on everybody, clawing and fighting my way to the top, fighting my way through injuries, pain, all kinds of opponents, all kinds of shapes and sizes. And it didn't matter who it was, Shawn Michaels. I went through the tag teams. I went through the Intercontinental. But you know, Shawn Michaels, I've won a few, I've lost a few, but I'm right now, I'm at the highest. I am the World Wrestling Federation champion, and I'm proud of it. Shawn Michaels, you're a great wrestler. You got all kinds of great moves, and I got nothing but respect for you. You're going to be a great Intercontinental champion. But Shawn Michaels, tonight, we're going to find out who's going to survive as the World Wrestling Federation champion.
Hart by no means was a terrific promo at this time.
He was not, but so it's all the more surprising that Vince would decide to put the belt on this guy at this time when there were so many other people with much stronger promos, but obviously not as good.
He went based on, like, this is what Brett told us when we interviewed him, was that the fan mail he got was just huge. Mm-hmm. Like, he got so much fan mail. Mm-hmm. And this was a real transitional period for the WWF. Yeah. They had instituted drug testing, which they were strict on. That's three, Bulldog and Warrior. The fact they fired those two, that was a giant statement. Like, that was not two guys middle of the card. Like, they were in prominent positions at that point. Warrior fucked up their main event for the pay-per-view and got rid of them. So this was, even going back to SummerSlam earlier that year, Bulldog and Hart went on last, and that was kind of promoted as the main event in the UK. Mm-hmm. But here in the US, it was Savage Warrior that was promoted as the main event. And this show, it was, you know, definitely they were also plugging the Mr. Perfect Savage match big. But you were putting two guys who were, by WWF standards, were just completely tiny.
Yeah.
And it was a total 180 from your traditional WWF style of main event. Mm-hmm. So a lot of pressure on these two to kind of deliver here. They start very slow during this match. Each isolated the arm and was working on it. And Michaels would wear down Hart, threw him chest first into the turnbuckle, worked a ridiculously long rear chin lock spot. Hart then misses Michaels as he's tied in the ropes, as he runs into the ropes like feet first as Michaels escapes at the last minute. We see a drop kick off the second rope by Michaels. Hart catches the legs and then applies the sharpshooter for the win. I kind of glanced over this match, but it was like 25 minutes here.
Yeah.
It was really interesting because a lot of people expected this to just be like really hot right out of the gate. And they worked it like almost like an NWA title match from like the 70s that you'd see with like Funkin' Briscoe or something. It was very slow to start, but really picked up in the final 10 minutes. And the crowd really bought into the finish here with Hart beating Michaels with the sharpshooter. At the Survivor Series.
Yeah, it seemed very slow. And the movesets, by comparison to today's standards, were very simple. They're all just very basic holds. But it seemed to all work, and the crowd seemed to be into it.
After the match, snow came down from the ceiling, and Santa Claus entered the ring. Even though it was a Thanksgiving-themed pay-per-view, I guess a giant turkey wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, is that usually what happens?
Well, they always have the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and that usually signals the beginning of the Christmas season in the States. Whatever. And then the show ended, and I was so glad we had the Coliseum exclusive way, because we then got an exclusive backstage interview with Santa Claus congratulating Bret Hart. And
as Bret is sitting on Santa's lap, sucking on a
lollipop candy or a candy cane, and he asked for peace and prosperity for everybody. And in the new year, he wants the biggest and the baddest opponents to prove that he is the best. Mm-hmm. And I took this to be a tease for the Yokozuna program. And if it was meant to be that, brilliant. If not, well, it's not like anyone saw this exclusive on Coliseum video.
They actually played this on TV, too.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
You have a hell of a memory, way.
I actually remember this vividly.
Oh, okay.
Sitting on Santa Claus's lap. And I really enjoyed it.
I think it's safe to say Michaels and Hart was the match of the night.
Yeah.
This was a pretty bad show.
Yeah.
I give this like a 2 out of 10, and yeah, half of that is for the Nails promo.
I really do enjoy the promos on these old shows, just to go back and
so look much at better these than today's.
Yeah, and it's like watching an episode of that, you know, the Raw old school.
Yeah, I just thought this was like their height of it. Not their height. It got even worse, but there were just so many ridiculous gimmicks.
Sure.
At this point, that it was, ugh.
Yeah.
Drove me nuts at times, like with Tatanka, and it was just too much of it. Like,
yeah,
all on one show. That I think that's why I even like Bret and Michaels more, because it was a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just two guys. Their gimmicks are they're good wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really good main event. And it's a match that I think often gets forgotten. I don't know if some people have written that, you know, their 92 was a real classic that people gloss over. I'm not going to label this one a classic. It was a good match.
Yeah.
And probably for the standards at the time in 1992, it was probably way better than it really holds up to be.
Mm-hmm.
Still a very good match, but I'm not going to put it near my top Bret Hart list of matches or anything like that.
I've never really heard that. I've never
as much as people will this always remember the 97 show, they had a hell of a match before that finish leading up to it. I thought they had much better matches later. But anyway, that's what I give it a 2 out of 10.
I give it a 4.
All right.
Let's do that.
So that was the Survivor Series 1992, everybody, and we're going to get into your feedback right now. But before we do, we had a chance. Well, I shouldn't say we had a chance. 8 years ago, Kamala was on the Law with Jeff Merrick and Dan Lavransky, and part of the conversation regarded his feud with The Undertaker at this point in time, discussing some of the what he perceived to be unfair payoffs at this time, and working with The Undertaker and that 1992 run. So let's hear from Mr. Jim Harris.
Where did the Kamala gimmick come from? I think everybody that I've talked to, so many of my friends, we wonder who created the Kamala gimmick. Did you have a hand in it, Jim?
Yeah, well, when I was living in London in 1981 or 82, I started painting my face then. But it's a guy that used to wrestle called the Great Mephisto. His name is Frankie Kane.
Right.
Now, he is responsible for it because he's the one that told me when I was living in London, I told him that I was going to Africa for a tour. And he told me all the tools that he wanted me to bring back, you know, so I could create this gimmick. So I give him credit for that.
Where in Africa did you go to get all the gimmick?
Well, I went to Zambia. I lived there for about 6 months in Zimbabwe and Kenya. But I was wrestling there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was the money like wrestling there?
The money wasn't too good. Well, money never was too good with me in wrestling.
Is that right? You never made a good buck?
I never made a good buck.
Because Kamala is one of the most enduring characters of all time. Everybody.
Yeah,
everybody knows Kamala. And generally you associate that with some kind of bank, Jim.
Yeah. Well, when I was in Mid-South Sports down in Louisiana, now that's where I made my biggest money, but it was a small territory. It was good money back then. And after that, I never made it. I never made money in the WWF. A lot of people it surprised a lot of people that I never made money in the WWF. My opponents did, though, but I didn't.
Now, why is that, Jim? That say, you know, you were telling me earlier that that SummerSlam match that you did with Undertaker in the UK, he made huge money and you made practically nothing. How was this allowed to happen?
I don't understand it. He made $500,000 and I only made $13,000.
He made $500,000 for that one match?
Yeah, for that one match. Now, he didn't tell me this, but I saw it on the books one night in Long Island. We was wrestling there one night and I saw it in Pat Patterson's briefcase.
Uh-huh.
He left it open and I saw it. So Steve Lombardi is the one that told me that he knew how much each of us made. So that's how I found out.
So you made $13,000 for that match and Taker took home $500,000.
Yeah, that's it.
Was that a sort of theme? I mean, I don't want to, you know, talk about money too much. There's so much to talk about with you, Jim Harris, who played the role of Kamala, most of a member from the World Wrestling Federation. And you say you didn't make a lot of money.
No, I didn't.
I have a really hard time believing that because you were all over and you're one of those guys that every territory you went to, whether it was for Watts, whether it was for Lawler, whether it was for Vince, you always drew big houses.
Yeah, I know that. But I never made any money. I mean, it got so bad one time until I had to sleep, you know, like three of us guys used to share a motel room. They would share with me you know, because I couldn't afford it myself, like Steve Lombardi and Bruno Lawyer, Dr. Harvey Whippleman.
Right.
My manager. All three of us used to share rooms together. And then it was so bad that we couldn't even we barely could afford a rental car. We used to have a real small, the cheapest one that we could find.
Yeah. Now, when you found out about this and that, you know, that there's such a range difference between the figures, did you approach Vince McMahon? Did you say to him, hey, Vince, I'm drawing big money for you. I should be getting more.
Yeah. I went to Vince. I had a meeting with Vince a couple of times, but it didn't do any good. So he told me that, you know, if I was unhappy and went and think I could make more somewhere else, that I was welcome to go. But he had most of the territories already tied up. It was nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I might have went to WCW, but then I did go there after I left the WWF in 93. I went there in 95, I think. Mm-hmm. And it was even worse. I had my last match in WCW, I had it with Hogan on that, Bash on the Beach, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was a live pay-per-view, and I only made $800.
What?
For that match. $800. Now, I have the check here now.
You only made $800 for working Hogan on pay-per-view.
On pay-per-view in WCW. Yeah, so anyway, I left there. And the next thing, I just came home and started back to driving truck.
Is that what you're doing now? You're driving a truck?
Yeah, that's what I do now. I'm over the road driving truck. Something I done before I got into wrestling.
So was that the main reason that you left wrestling, that you just weren't getting the kind of money that everybody else was?
Yeah, I mean, I could see Hogan making more money than me, but, you know, it shouldn't have been that much of a difference.
Right.
You know, I mean, I just almost started there. And then Vince, even the last time I went to the WWF was in 92, I think, and that was right before the SummerSlam, and Vince called me up and asked me to come back. So he wouldn't have called me if I wasn't a card drawer. And he asked me would I sign a contract that he take out 15% of my earning just in case I decide to walk out. He would keep it. Well, I agreed to that. But I had walked out a few times before, and that's just because I was about to start a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was a matter of survival. Why'd you go back for the gimmick battle royal then?
You know, they had asked me to come to some of the matches before then, but I wouldn't go. So this time I just said that I was going. And I went, and I tell you, I didn't enjoy it at all. I enjoyed seeing some of the guys, but I couldn't wait until that next morning to get on the earliest flight out of there.
Nice, some old school law.
There you go, everybody. So that was Kamala, who was in much better spirits to do an interview in 2002 than when he was at the Fan Expo and we were shooting with him in the background.
Yeah, he straight up said, "What's this for?" "No, I don't want to."
Yeah, and then was very upset that he had to be used for
he was at some
great Canadian wrestling.
Yeah, there was like an indie fed that was set up at the expo as well, and they brought in Kamala, I guess, to do some talk or something.
He could not be bothered.
Oh my god, it was just so weird seeing this man in his leopard skin skirt and face paint
and
body paint,
belly paint,
just stroll into this room. Really pissed off and stressed out, like a normal, everyday working man.
So, there
Kamala.
We go.
I urge anyone to head out to these fan expos where you can see old, classic wrestlers in their current daily lives.
Pissed off. That was the same day we tried to get that Virgil interview, all in one day. Kamala and
That's
Virgil
right.
were not, a,
yeah.
not very accommodating to us.
Nope.
But Jim Duggan was.
Jim Duggan was, Snuka was, and Iron Sheik.
Man. Nash.
There's
some
well.
Good ones
That's
there.
Right, yeah.
Dawn Marie didn't want to talk to us. Well,
she kind of blew us off.
Yeah. Come back at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's
I got to answer my emails, guys.
Yeah, I'm busy. Okay, let's get into some feedback right now. We've got a handful of it today. We'll start off with Andrew D. Reese. John and Way, my God, that TNA review was the greatest review away of all time. You were without a doubt the highlight of my week, so much so that I want to send you guys something for that podcast. I'm going to go out of my way to tell people I know about this group and these podcasts because they are a must listen every week. I thank you guys so much for the laughs every week. You guys are fucking awesome, and please do not stop reviewing TNS. Total nonstop shit impact. All right. Well, Andrew's going to send us something, I guess.
Yeah, I hope it's not anthrax.
Yeah. We'll have him send it to our office.
Okay. Jermone Jackson, John and Wei, you guys have to stop doing the impact review for the sake of your own health. Hearing you both flip out only 2 weeks in has got to break some kind of record. At this rate, one of you two is going to end up having a heart attack before the end of the year.
Maybe. All right. Nate Milton, Brother Pollock. A couple of quick points on the Review and Impact podcast.
Nate Milton, by the way, is I know him to be a huge defender of TNA.
Yes, and I will say there are a lot of people out there who will just blindly defend, you know, whether it be TNA or other forms. I have no problem with people that enjoy stuff and just tell me why. And Nate, yeah, to his credit, whenever he disagrees with something, always gives reasons. Mm-hmm. And that's what he does here. And that's why I want to include his email, because I do value Nate's feedback. Number one, the new title is perfect for Hardy. In fact, I read somewhere that he designed it. Don't know if that's true, but it looks like some of his other artwork. It is one of his friends, apparently, actually did design the belt. Not only do you put even more heat on Jeff and Immortal, but you set up the inevitable triumphant moment that when RVD or Angle or Pope or whomever it is defeats Hardy and brings back the classic TNA title belt. I'm also not a big fan of custom belts, but this works for me. Regarding the Pope and Bischoff, of course Pope would be angry with his family for betraying them, but they don't work for TNA, so they're not important to this feud, making Bischoff even more despicable. Bischoff took a business matter and made it personal. In the context of the storyline, I'm sure Pope has addressed his family members at home and in private, but no matter how much betrayal he feels, most families would choose to keep their dirty laundry behind closed doors. In fact, I'm actually pleased that Russo chose not to bring in the Pope's brother as part of Immortal. This feud should be simple and focused. You have a group that is abusing their power and a ragtag bunch of heroes who must work together out of necessity to bring them down. Number three, you're spot on with Taylor Wilde. That being said, I had a feeling that the Shore was going to get over. Rob Echoes has always been underrated and Bayliss is solid in her role. I also think that putting them against a guy like Lethal has helped them greatly. All in all, I enjoyed the show. It was far from perfect, but there were a lot of good elements in there for me. Joe looked strong, Angle made an impact on his return, and the faces continued to gain momentum. And on top of that, we got some pretty good matches, especially RVD and Kaz and AJ Stevie. I get that it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I'd say that Impact is the most consistently entertaining show of the major three wrestling programs. And then in brackets, SmackDown is the best, but it's not nearly as interesting as Impact is week to week. All right. I've made my feelings very clear about the title. I'm not a fan of the custom belts, and I will go all the way back to the Austin belt. I've always found them really, really silly, and the way they set it up, though, they tossed this title in the garbage. So when is it magically going to be in the possession of the babyfaces to bring back?
Someone can just easily dig it out of the garbage.
Okay.
Or they can make a new belt. Fine. Like they make.
I just think it looks incredible. The title just looks. It looks exactly what it is. Like someone's buddy made this belt in their basement. It looks like something off like an indie show. I think it just makes the company look extremely low rent.
Seeing Hardy walk out with it on Thursday, I can see your point, and I do agree. He doesn't look like a champion with the belt. However, the idea I don't have a problem with, because unlike the Austin belt, unlike the Cena belt, you know, Jeff Hardy is a heel, and to me, this is more like Hogan spray painting the WCW belt with the NWO rather than.
I thought that was much more effective, because it was like every time you see that title, that title symbolized WCW, and here you have this spray paint right across it, which was what the exact angle that the NWO was pushing at the time, that they were overcoming the tradition of WCW and.
And that's what they're going for with this.
Well, first of all, that original TNA title meant nothing to begin with. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone really has much prestige attached to that title. I just find when Jeff Hardy walks out with it, it looks ridiculous. Like, this is what all these baby faces are fighting for, is this title. Whether they bring back the other title or not,
I'm positive they will.
All right.
Positive.
That's fine. In terms of the Pope Bischoff thing, first of all, I see this so much from TNA fans where it's like, it drives me nuts, because there's people like Nate here and there's other people that write into us who put more thought into some of this stuff than the creative team will.
Yeah.
It should not be the audience's job to make sense out of the shit they throw at you.
Yeah.
It's like, do you think this whole thing about Pope's brother and not wanting to air their dirty laundry, do you think they have explained that at all or even thought of that?
I don't even think
that was never even brought up. In fact, there was no mention of his brother. The Pope has not brought up his brother once.
Yeah.
And it's like these fans like come out and they take this stuff that is so nonsensical and somehow try to tie it together. That is not your job to do. And if that's not stated on television, the average person is not going to be thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
These people are going the extra mile to try and make sense of this stuff. And it's like, why use the Pope's brother if you're not bringing him back? If you're going to make – and then try to transfer the heat onto Bischoff, who's not going to be the one in the match the next month. How is this suddenly turned onto Abyss?
Yeah.
Align Pope with somebody that's going to turn on him that you can actually get some business out of. And then in terms of the rest of the show, he enjoyed RVD and Kazarian. I thought that was incredibly rushed. AJ and Stevie is fine. It's like they were just such short matches. I didn't really put much stock into either of them.
I don't remember any of this.
They were like 3-minute matches. And I think this past week's Impact just blew me away with Stevie Richards that – it was not. It was a non-issue. Yeah. The neck injury. Why was that even put on the show last week?
Yeah.
I thought it was to write him off, which apparently it wasn't.
Nope.
So that made no sense to me. I'm just so tired of, you know, the fans have to do the job of what the creative team should be because the creative team puts so little thought into what they present on television that they can throw whatever shit they want out and people will just digest it. And all I'm saying is that you don't have to just. Swallow what they throw at you.
Yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's what we try to do here is try to make sense of the stuff that they've given us. And it's
be like
it's
Piper's
not our job.
Promo on Raw. If he had just come out and done a random promo and never brought up the fact he was never a champion and just lead fans to have to assume that he's upset at Cena, why can't you just come out? And that was just a clear-cut promo.
Yeah.
Do not let this guy Wade Barrett. Don't hand him the title when guys like me, you'll be spitting on our legacies by doing it. It's just, I don't know. It's not everybody's cup of tea, as Nate said, and right now it is not mine.
I don't necessarily disagree with him when he says that Impact is the most consistently entertaining show of the major three wrestling programs. Because
entertaining and effective are two completely different words.
Yes. But, I find myself watching Impact, and like I'm not really bored.
I'm not bored during Impact. Yeah. I will absolutely say I'm not bored.
Just because there's so much going on and so much going on in my head when I watch this show.
It is more of a chore to watch Impact, though. In this, like, I'm not bored, but at the same time, so much shit's happening. Like, my notes for Impact are way longer than, like, Raw or SmackDown. Because I'm trying to write down all this shit and piece it together and make sense out of it.
Impact makes me more emotional than Raw.
Yes. All right, let's keep going with the one.
Billy Gunn. I had a bum eye and had to take this weekend pretty easy. I took the time to rifle through my backup of Laws, Raws, and my fave, Rise, dating back to October. It was great to hear Wade go off from a beacon of hope and light to the ranting, raving madman after just two impacts. I've never heard a glass half full say, fuck, so much in my life. Great job, guys.
Mark Cardoso, the 1992 Survivor Series, the first Survivor Series that didn't have the traditional Survivor Series matches, and if I recall, had so many changes to the card. I recall at one time after Bulldog lost the IC title to Michaels, he was supposed to wrestle the Mountie on this show, as they showed the graphic on one of the old WWF news segments on Wrestling Challenge and Superstars. I missed those old news segments. Yeah, Mountie was also let go during this period as well.
Oh, right. What, for not for the steroids thing?
I don't think so, no. I think his was another reason.
Josh Thomas, with HBK's tights, did he go back to the Hearts? He did go back to the Hearts for the next pay-per-view in a 2 out of 3 falls match with Triple H where he lost. I guess he was just trying a different look. Michaels and Jeans kind of made sense for his first match in 4 years, but I think the fact that Survivor Series was in New York, Sean should have wore the old-school tights. It's timeless.
Let's go to Travis Cummings. John and Way, I think you guys should find the most ridiculously looking costumes you can find and wear them as you do the podcast. At least that would give people a reason to peep through the window and stare. Review an Impact is already better than Review a Raw, just because it's so shitty and full of endless laughs. I'm glad I wasn't the only one that noticed Tommy Dreamer spitting a mouthful of water on Rhino or Taylor Wilde coming down past Robbie G as he pinned her tag partner as if she didn't even see it. What made that part even more hilarious was her looking back with a "what just happened" look on her face. You two are the hardest working men on the airwaves. Maybe it's time for a TV show? Keep up the good war. I'm sure he means word. Well, thank you.
Work.
That would make more sense. I don't know what he was talking about wearing costumes. That will not be occurring.
Yeah, I don't think so. But thank you for the kind words. Works. Aram Nasrallah. Hey, Wei and John, thanks for all the reviews. Review and Impact was awesome. Goddamn, a lot of stuff happens on that show, which I've already forgotten. Anyway, just thanks again for filling my request. I know that I could have just gone on YouTube. Aram requested a song last week, and we played that to end off the review. I know that I could have just gone on YouTube, but that you would make the effort to help was really something. The fans here should know that we can count on you guys with your great humor and knowledge to help us throughout the good and bad days in which we all have. So never stop doing what you are so great at. And in the words of John Cena, never give up. Thank you, and can't say that enough.
I really hope that chant doesn't get over. Never give up.
It already has. Oh, man. Somebody on the Facebook group this week posted a video of Flava Flav wearing the John Cena shirt.
Really?
Yeah, in an interview.
Oh, I didn't see that.
And then the person, sorry, I forget your name, but the person also wrote, "It looks like someone has already stolen the idea of a black John Cena."
Oh, that, I didn't watch the video, but I know the post. Andy Gordon, hey guys, thanks for the Hunt to Kill review. I've seen only one of Austin's movies and highly enjoyed it. With that said, could you please review his movie Damage? It was one of his better, in my opinion. Keep the great reviews coming and can't wait for the Impact review.
How many movies has he done?
He's done quite a few now. He did the Condemned, Damage, Hunt to Kill, Expendables.
They all feel the same. Gary Weston, guys, I was watching an old episode of Nitro on WWE Classics on Demand this week. And guess who made his Nitro debut? Scott Putski. He wrestled Kidman to a no contest as the match was broken up by Kevin Nash and the newly formed NWO Wolfpack.
Great.
Ironically, Putski would not have won the Scott Putski Award on this show, as he was clearly outclassed by both the Macho Man and Lex Luger.
No, I have no doubt. Matt Cruz, I can't help but think that the WWE is leaning towards Cena versus R-Truth at Mania. Also, if TNA wants to turn Jeff Hardy heel, all they need to do is bring in JR and have Hardy beat him up. It worked for Austin, it worked for Hunter, and it worked for Taker.
It does feel like they're going to do some sort of R-Truth heel turn.
Or keep him babyface if Cena turns.
Yeah. I still don't really
see that feels
happening.
More likely.
You think Cena will turn? You think Cena has...
You never know.
Yeah. Well,
caught.
Shit. Shy Avigan. Hey, guys, I'm watching Survivor... Did you read the last...
No, that's right.
Hey, guys, I'm watching Survivor Series 1992. Because I had to calculate this, and I know John would do the same so he can analyze, 2,478 days are 6.7 years. That's Nails' time served in prison. Also, let us know if you had the slick face feature promo before the event. I got the pay-per-view and countdown version. Yes, we did.
We did, and it was quite the sermon talking about nothing. Well, there, 6.7 years. So I guess because they were aiming to a family audience, they probably couldn't say what Nails was charged with.
I'm
6 years, that's...
6 years? What could that be?
Breaking and entering with a weapon? I don't know. Armed robbery, I guess that would qualify as.
Looks like a sexual harassment charge.
Maybe. Well, that was his shoot gimmick.
Yeah.
Well, his, at least, charges to Vince. Robert McNulty, as much as I enjoy Review and Impact, I do fear for both of your long-term mental health, guys. Too much of Russo's Crash TV can do serious damage. The man is a complete tool. Can see overexposure to TNA leading to increased drinking or worse, less interest in wrestling. On a lighter note, have lost count of the amount of times I get funny looks from people on the street while I'm listening to your many podcasts, laughing away to myself, remembering the old school days when wrestling was good and sometimes great. Keep it up, guys. P.S. Can Wei please tell us what car he drives? This storyline has been going on longer than the Hummer angle. Well, no one's guessed it yet, and we've dropped a lot of hints.
I think people have guessed it. Someone has.
Oh, did?
Didn't Jay give it away on the law or something?
I think so, yeah.
Well, I'd... Anyway.
Now it's guess's license plate number.
I drive a Honda Civic. A Honda Civic from 2010.
Awesome.
That's my car. Fantastic. And it is blue. So if I ever see you guys at an event, go out there and look for my car.
And Whale give you the finger from his car.
That's right. Jack Pisco, I will admit watching Impact hasn't been the same since you guys started reviewing it. In the past, I watched the show and just accepted what I saw. This shit needs to be called out on because TNA Creative isn't doing it. I hated the Hardy title, hated Rhino and Brother Ray's heel turns, and hated the paralysis angle with Stevie. Looks like the rise and fall of TNA is right on schedule.
Wait, there was no rise. It's just the fall and then the further fall of TNA. I'm serious. They never had a rise.
Yeah. Old school WWE, maybe it'll be fall and rise.
The tumble and the fall.
Maybe they will. Anyway. Old school WWE Raw was great. JR briefly on commentary, actually calling a match instead of making stupid jokes, getting catchphrases over, and bickering with King was a welcomed breath of fresh air. If he isn't calling Taker's last match at Mania, that will be a crime. Keep on trucking, guys.
Keep on trucking. And finally,
I drive a Civic.
Stefan writes, okay, I have a question. I don't watch Impact often, but I saw the first bit of the main event, didn't follow it into reaction, and I have a question about the intros. Ric Flair's subtitle was Wrestling God. Is that new? Isn't it like gimmick infringement or something? That said, I really like the finisher subtitle for Morgan. If TNA has that for all wrestler intros, I just might start watching more regularly. Yes, I know I'm easy to win over, but hard to keep. Is this a regular thing? I didn't even notice this, Stefan. I guess Flair only debuted that catchphrase in the first segment of that show.
Yeah.
So I guess
I don't think you can.
Their keys on their intro is going to bring in a new fan. I don't understand that, but hey.
Yeah, everybody watches for different reasons.
Maybe. I have never paid attention to that.
Maybe he wants to be a still store operator for wrestling someday.
Maybe. Maybe he admires that.
But yeah, I don't think you can copyright. Yeah, I guess you
wrestling
can.
Wrestling God.
I guess you can if they wanted to, but they probably haven't. And the finisher thing, they don't do for everybody. Or do they? They just write whatever.
Yeah, I don't pay enough attention to really realize that. So thanks everyone for the feedback. You can always leave yours at reviewaway.com on our Facebook group, or just go search on Facebook, Live Audio Wrestling's Review Away Facebook group. We will be back this Tuesday with Review of Raw, and then we'll be back again with Review and Impact later on Friday. For next week, Way, I kind of consulted the Review Away Facebook group of kind of what they wanted to hear, if they wanted another Survivor Series or so, and we got a handful of votes for a WCW pay-per-view, so I thought we would do World War III, the three-ring, 60-man Battle Royal.
Oh, boy.
Can you say clusterfuck? And that will be coming up next week, 1995 edition, the very first show, which Nate Milton actually mentioned he attended live. So maybe we'll get some live notes from Nate from a show 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So we'll switch it up from a WWF event to WCW next week. And on our way out here, Way, what tune do you want to leave with?
I think you might know what I would be going with, and that would be a selection off of the new Girl Talk album.
Solid pick.
That I know John Pollock has listened to at least four times.
It's more than that. This, I was not aware their album was coming out on Monday, and I
wasn't either. Nobody was.
Yeah, he caught everyone by surprise. He was ready apparently to release it on Friday, and then he held off till Monday to do some last minute edits. And it was actually your Facebook group that I saw that it had come out. Right. Went to his site. Then I had to go to a mirror site to download it.
Yeah.
It's a free download.
Yeah.
And I've done nothing but listen to that all week when I've been, whether I've been walking somewhere, driving somewhere.
Yeah.
I have listened to this thing probably seven times by now.
Yeah, aside from, by now, which is a full week that you've had. Aside from just, you know, like having nice danceable music, the community that has been created revolving around this music is really cool, because you have basically any fan out there trying to do their best to pick out every sample that you can hear. For those of you who don't know, Girl Talk is like a mashup artist, but instead of mashing up, you know, single songs, he basically mashes up like maybe, I think it's something like 300.
It's 312 songs or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, together into one long, maybe an hour.
72 minute
yeah. thing. And so he has finally released a full list of all the samples, but he hasn't said where each one is found. He just gave you like an alphabetical list of all the artists found on the thing. So it's just a lot of fun there. I saw a page yesterday. A fan has created a thing where you can play the album on his site, and then as the song plays, it'll display the names of all the samples
oh, that's
that
cool.
you hear. So, yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a fantastic album. So we will
album in a loose
yeah,
term.
He's not selling it at all, nor could he, because yeah. he does not have the rights to use any of these songs.
Yeah, there's also... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, his defense is that this is something where he feels the fair use doctrine that
yep.
they have in the States completely lends itself to this style of a production or a mix.
Yeah.
He's not making money off of this. He's in no way infringing on sales for any of these. If anything...
Well, he is making money off of it via touring. But you can say the same
sure.
thing about any DJ
yeah,
that's out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, phenomenal job. I love this album.
Yeah, actually, I don't know if you know, but there's a movie about all that. That there's a movie about...
I didn't know that.
There's a movie about basically free rights and what is it?
Fair use.
Fair use and as it relates to art, that focuses solely on Girl Talk and uses Girl Talk as an example for the whole thing. It's produced by the NFB, and it's called RIP... A Remix Manifesto. So I urge you, John Paul.
No, I will check that out because I learned this year that if we ever do another documentary, it'd be very advantageous to do it in the U.S. instead of Canada for that reason.
Oh, really?
It's not so nice up here in Canada.
Are there some issues
when it comes to that?
Okay.
Well,
anyway.
So we'll go out here with Girl Talk. And for those of you that have not heard any of Girl Talk's work, here's a sample.
Yeah, let's stop talking and just play.
Is my sway. All the girls are on me down. Everybody pay attention. This right here is my pretty boy sway. 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 Get out the way. Shouting in that clothes, straight flexing. I'm looking for a yellow phone, long hair star. Thick and the hips, come get in my car. So your party will start. We take off and go to Mars. Pretty boy, take off in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Whatever the pull y'all roll. Y'all job just hanging up ropes. Step to me, get burned like toast. Motherfuckers out of your some egos. Cash full nose. Done bag out most of those. From the VA to the LA coast. Is it go? Oh.
Drop to the flow, do a split. Drop to the flow, dance. Drop to the flow.